talking to Laurens Buys. You're an interdisciplinary social scientist at the University of Amsterdam.
Yes, my course, and that is academic freedom. If I want to be critical on the vaccines, I can be critical on the vaccines. If I want to be critical on non-binary, I can express that. I should have arguments, and people can be shocked, but we have to debate. Yeah, so it totally exploded. So I wrote an opinion piece critiquing woke culture in my faculty. The whole board has taken position against me. They have ordered top-down to my colleagues to isolate themselves from me. They have supported students that are mobilizing against me. They have scapegoated me in the press, in internal communication. This is absolutely unacceptable. And we have whistleblower legislation in Holland to prevent that things happen exactly that happened to me. What I see on the campus is that my enemies that think that I'm some sort of Andrew Tate, who is... I often get compared to Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate. I also see some similarities, yeah, because I've broken out of the norm just like they have. But I come from the left. Yeah? So they accuse me. So these people who are on the campus who accuse me, they are organizing. It has been a disgrace how I have been treated as a whistleblower. That in itself is against the law. And it's enough reason to fire the whole board of this university. So I think we should put that banner back in the universities, remove the war propaganda and put this fundamental rights on the wall to remind people how crucial the scientific and academic project is for freedom. At the same time, we should also not forget how what diversity policy and wokeness has brought us. So then I'll do a one-to-one direct confrontation with this monster that I call woke neoliberal university. And I hope that other colleagues and students will join me and that they will dare to speak out, because I'm not alone. A lot of people here at campus feel the repression, but they're afraid, because if you speak out, you're seen as racist, sexist, anti-diversity, anti-science, bad person.
Professor Schippers, may I ask you some questions?
Yes, of course. What do you want to know, Rico?
It's January 25th, 2023. My name is Rico Brouwer, talking to Laurens Buys. And we're going to do this in English. We're both Dutch. But for the English-speaking audience, you're an interdisciplinary social scientist at the University of Amsterdam.
Yes.
A publicist and entrepreneur on the field of diversity and inclusion.
Yes.
How's that for an English translation?
It's a great translation, okay. Absolutely.
So thanks for having us and talking to Follow the Science about your profession and what happened to you over the last week.
Yes.
So, yeah, maybe start with that. So you wrote an opinion piece.
Yeah.
And then... what happened after that? So maybe you can walk us through that.
I will. Yeah, so it totally exploded. So I wrote an opinion piece critiquing woke culture in my faculty, especially the social science departments. I'm very worried about the development that woke culture is having here at the University of Amsterdam. I see how it is on a collision course with academic freedom. In the opinion piece, I explain how woke culture basically is frustrating my work and undermining my work. And I describe a couple of incidents, both in the classroom but also in my research, where I feel that if I speak out, I'm a gender studies scholar, I work on the multicultural society, I work also on COVID and COVID policies, and I've encountered that recently I speak out about certain topics, I can have very controversial statements. Often my standpoints are seen as controversial, and more often I feel cancelled. I feel the people are free to disagree with me, but they don't have a discussion with me. They say that my standpoint is wrong, and that it's immoral, and that it is a form of discrimination, and that, you know, I sort of intrude on people's safe space. And so it's really hindering my academic work. So I wrote the piece, and the reason why it made such a big impact here in the in the academic community of the UvA, the University of Amsterdam, but also in the, nationally in the Netherlands. I think, because it totally exploded in the media storm, but I think it's because I am myself woke. I am myself left-wing. I've been working my whole life. I'm a progressive. I've been working my whole life on diversity, inclusion. I have a business. I set up a business in diversity and inclusion. So this time, critique on woke didn't come from the conservative right, but it suddenly came from within the community. And I think that is why it's people were caught off guard by it and were so surprised, and what made it such a big impact.
So critique on you is coming from the left rather than the right.
Yeah, that's so bizarre that now I encounter that I am being attacked by my own university, by my faculty staff, by my boss, by my colleagues, by my students. And publicly, I get support from politicians that are often associated with the far right. Yeah, so they see me struggling.
And well, that's refreshing. That's new. Then.
Yeah, for me, this is totally new because, I have been an activist, a left-wing activist my whole life. Okay. And so things are sort of shifting. They're put upside down for me. I'm confused. Yeah, I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, that's the reason why I asked to have this interview, so to ask you and to find out with you what is happening.
Yeah.
You have been, how long have you been a professor here?
I've been teaching here from 2007.
Okay.
At different departments, political science, anthropology, sociology, and also interdisciplinary social science.
Okay. What you deliver to your students stems from science. So that's not your opinion that you deliver to those students, that your research, and that's your profession.
It is, right?
So what you put into that opinion article, that also must have come from your experience and from your knowledge.
For sure.
So how was this thing different from the past 6 years?
So basically what I did in the opinion piece is that I explained that in my work in gender and sexuality, I do research on the concept of androgyny. And basically my work on androgyny shows me that non-binary is an invalid category. Yeah, and I'm also very critical on the whole non-binary development. Yeah, so I wrote a piece, an article, in which I explained from my scientific work on androgyny why I think that the category of non-binary is untenable. And it's also, I call it pseudoscience. And I think it is... we have lost ourselves a little bit there. We should not invest in it any further and abandon the non-binary project. That's what I say. And so basically I make that statement based on very nuanced and extensive scientific research. And my students accuse me of discrimination. Yeah. So they say you cannot say that you disqualify a vulnerable minority group and you deny their existence. And this is against the policy that we have here at the University of Amsterdam to protect minorities. So you should be fired. Yeah. And then I say, well, this is canceling. Yeah. So I always also said clearly to my students and my staff, I don't mind if you disagree with me. I also don't mind if people get angry with me because I'm a staunch supporter of having more emotions in the university. I know it's about personal things. People can be angry. People might even slam a door. People can walk away in the middle of conversation and then return later to continue. But they should not say you should be fired because you say something that is forbidden. Then I think here we see that diversity policy suddenly becomes authoritarian, repressive, and goes towards censorship. And this is only one example. I also gave the example, I work on homophobia. We see here in the university, from the University of Amsterdam, I research homophobia in Amsterdam, in the city of Amsterdam. I research the perpetrators. Why do they commit the violence? What makes them homophobic? What are their motives? So this is what my research has been about for years. And I see in my perpetrator group, in my data, I see an overrepresentation of Dutch Moroccan boys that commit the violence. And I see most likely that there is a link with Islam. it's a nuanced story because also a lot of white Dutch boys commit the violence. So it's not only the Islam, but I've seen it's a remarkable overrepresentation. And I want to study what is the role of Islam in their homophobic attitudes. And also this is often I get canceled. If I say that, then I'm accused of of Islamophobia. Yeah, so that is another example. And the third example that I mentioned in the article is COVID policies. I am not only into gender and sexuality studies, but I'm also an expert in science and technology studies. These are my two fields. I'm a big fan of the work of Bruno Latour, the French philosopher. And I teach in philosophy of technology. And I have been teaching with my students about the problems of the vaccination technology from a Latourian perspective. And so how do these financial interests of Pfizer play a role in how this technology is developed? How should it be more democratic? What can be done to increase transparency and democracy in these kinds of technologies? Also, this, I have been canceled. I've been called by my directors, by my managers. They said I shouldn't say it, that I deny science, that I should not, that I'm anti-vax.
How does the conversation go then? So say I'm your manager and I'm doing this in this little room, for instance, close the door. Say you're denying science. But your answer would be, well, I'm actually doing a scientific study and these are the outcomes.
Yeah.
How does that work then?
That's a great question. So basically, and this also shows how authoritarian the UvA became, I tried to give arguments for my statements. And my manager said, Laurens, this is not a dialogue. This is an announcement. And you have been crossing our academic values. I'm not going to discuss this with you. You cannot say what you have said about the vaccinations. Stop. And there is no room for discussion. So he just stopped the conversation and gave me an official warning. Later, I was threatened with being fired. So this is what we see, that these people, they dress up their this kind of behavior. They dress it up by saying, I defend diversity, safe space, but also we protect against fake news and against conspiracy. And so this authoritarian movement that goes into the universities, at least here, it dresses up with virtues. Yeah? The virtue of inclusion, the virtue of countering fake news, the virtue of real science.
But you must have seen this happening over the last couple of years in the corona crisis then. This is not new.
No.
So it escalated over the last week.
Yeah. Basically, what happened when COVID started, the pandemic started, that made me aware of how serious the problem is here at the university, because the debate totally narrowed down. And since then, I became more aware, oh my gosh, it's also narrowing down in the gender debate, also in the Ukraine debate. I think the University of Amsterdam is just, there's war propaganda here in the faculty.
Okay, let me make an observation then, and in my words, so we are at your work right now.
Yes, welcome at the University of Amsterdam.
Thank you. So I walk up here and I see these posters, Ukraine posters with a flag with the colors.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting. Let's see what they're saying.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're saying we're anti-war or we're conscious about the serious conflict.
No.
It says Putin is bad. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm not paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But it is a political statement.
It's a political statement.
That makes this university political player.
And also,
that was a surprise to me.
Yeah, and it's not only posters, because they also give funds to Ukrainian students in universities in Ukraine, and they block Russian students. And so this is also happening. And so there's also this politics in who are we going to give subsidies and who are we going to refuse when it comes to international students.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the corona crisis and that you were told not to be opinionated on that as a professor.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine you would be, okay, fine, that's not my area of expertise, so I'll just continue on what I'm hired for and what I'm teaching. But that is what escalated over last week.
It did.
You also called upon the whistleblower protection scheme that you have here. Maybe we talk about that later.
Yeah.
But maybe at this point in this talk, do some definitions, because you mentioned the word woke.
Yes.
So you're the expert.
Yes.
I'm the journalist. Please tell me, what is woke?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about it. But so I see it as a social justice movement that basically originated from the universities, from the campuses in the United States and Canada. So North America. It came to Europe through international academic networks. And I've seen it happening. Yeah? So it's basically, it's an ideology. It's connected often to the social sciences, social justice departments, sociology, and these kinds of bachelor or master's programs, critical race studies, gender studies. Yeah? And these students, they have very radical views on a world without oppression against minorities. And I fully support that. Yeah? So in many ways, I'm also woke. And I have also learned a lot from woke culture. I have to confess, I just have to state that. It's very clear that there is a lot of value in woke culture. But nowadays, more and more when we talk about woke, and that's also how I now use the word, is to describe the excesses and the extremism. In a weird way, this whole narrative and discourse and movement on inclusion and diversity and equity has turned into a sort of decency police that has, if you disagree with very narrow codes of what should be said or thought, what is the proper thought, yeah, then you get attacked. So there's a weird sort of paradoxical exclusion of people who are critical on or who are not fitting this very narrow definitions of what is proper and what is good and what is decent. And so I more and more call it woke culture is basically radicalizing, not only in Amsterdam, here at the University of Amsterdam, but internationally in universities. And it is spreading out into the societies, from the universities into the societies.
I can imagine your students picking things up from you. You're the one that's teaching them.
Yeah.
But you're not teaching that that narrowing down.
No.
So who's teaching that then?
My colleagues.
Oh.
Yeah, so many of my colleagues I have seen over the past 10 years. It's been going very fast. So the first thing what I saw is we have the summer schools and we have some English-speaking courses for exchange students. A lot of people from North America came into these courses. This is where I saw it for the first time. I was confronted with students who attacked me for my syllabus, for the literature, for that there's not enough people of color, for that I didn't use the correct words to talk about race or gender.
And I can imagine you going, where did this come from?
Yeah, what is this suddenly? And I can tell you, it intimidated me. Mm-hmm. And also because I am left-wing and progressive, I was, in the first 2-3 years, I was basically listening. Because I was just like, what is this? And because they made so many good points. For example, they accused me of, your curriculum is white. Or I am white. And then I said, yeah, I'm white. But what do you mean? And then they made me clear, it's not so much your skin color, but your mode of thinking and your culture. And then it's like, it made me, and I thought, oh, okay, I can work with that. I see. Yeah, often we see white people as neutral and people of color having a culture. And now I'm also having a culture. Yeah, that's a good, let's reflect on that. So I was doing a lot of reflection. And how does it translate into my work as teacher and researcher? So basically, this is when the learning phase of woke was then in my career. And then after these 3 years, I became more and more aware that these students also mobilize these accusations as a way to destabilize me. And to sort of...
Not intentionally, though.
Maybe not. I think it's often unconscious. But it is for them a way to... Okay, for example, if they have a bad grade or if they don't want to discuss a theme because it doesn't fit their worldview, then they suddenly abuse the same energy and the same rhetoric to say, shut up. Yeah? So then suddenly I started to notice, whoa, okay, I understand that they were angry because they demand acceptance and equality for people of color, trans people. I agree that it should be urgent. So I appreciate the urgency that they communicate. But then suddenly I started to notice, wait, but it is getting authoritarian because I am well-willing. There's a lot of people well-willing, but it's never enough. Yeah, it's never enough. There's always accusations. There's always new words. There's always new trends that we have to participate in. They lost me with non-binary, for example. And then when I say that, discrimination, bigotry, sexism, he should be fired. My students are literally calling me to be fired because I'm critical with scientific arguments. I'm against non-binary as a category. And my whole life, I've been an activist on LGBTI. My whole life, I've been a trans ally. My whole life, I've been working here in the city of Amsterdam in our queer culture. And then suddenly you are seen as you have white privilege. You are a wrong person. You should shut up. Yeah, then I think, come on, this is getting aggressive. And nobody in university protects me, but the university protects them.
So, yeah. Yeah, we make move into how you're being treated by the university later.
Yeah.
First, that is what surprises me, observing this over the last years, where politically left, is by definition, for me anyway, open dialogue, inclusiveness, and not the authors. So when did that happen in your observation? When did it become authoritarian?
So what I saw it happen, so these American students came in, then suddenly it became more and more the norm in our regular programs and during the academic year. It became more and more the norm. What I basically saw happening in the past, I started at the University of Amsterdam in 2007. I saw a development in 10, 15 years that went to the point where we are now, and which I think basically it's a totalitarian power grab that's going on. We dressed up as woke. And so how did it happen? I was, when I started at the UvA, I'm not going to romanticize it because it had a lot of problems also back then. And it didn't learn the good lessons from woke, but what it had was pluralism. There were bizarre people in our faculty staff. I was being taught, for example, in my gender and sexuality classes, they were speaking about pedophilia, about rape, about animal sex, about diaper fetishism, about balloon sex. In my classes on political science, my teacher brought the far right wing leader of the far right wing political party. He said, "I want you to understand him. So, you know, postpone your judgment. You can have your judgment what you want outside of the class."
It would be unthinkable for that to happen now.
Unthinkable. And for me also, later when I did ethnographic research, I went with my colleagues, I went to conspiracy movement gatherings here in Amsterdam because we did ethnographic field work. So I was being taught, this is the old university, the old UvA. We were still housed in the sort of messy old buildings in the inner city of Amsterdam. It was full of books. Professors were secretly smoking in their rooms. Yeah. It was a messy place. Students were making soup in the afternoon and selling it. That was the canteen of the university. They made homemade soup. And so it was a different time. And also the faculty was more Dutch. More connected to the city of Amsterdam, and the city of Amsterdam is in itself a free space, a lot of diversity, a lot of different voices and people, different religions, different ideologies. So that also was all translated also in the faculty. And that was the starting place. This is what I was being taught in. And then what happened over the years? Suddenly, okay, so what happened is we moved to a new building. There was a movement from the central board of the university that they wanted to professionalize and neoliberalization, basically. So it was a wave of neoliberalization. We had to be more efficient. So the offices were dressed down. They started to talk about finances more. Every meeting that we had was suddenly a controller present who was calculating what everything would cost and also the overhead cost. What is the cost of one square meter? Every professor should only have 50 books and the rest you should throw away because we have space in our common book spaces. And so they calculate everything. Yeah? And so that was the first thing that happened. Also what happened is that our central board made an agreement. They made a total financial restructuring. So they made an agreement with the Deutsche Bank, a huge financial institution here in Europe. And they made a huge sort of financial restructuring also to pay for the new faculty. They made the science park. This is where the betas, the natural sciences, are housed. It's a huge real estate project. They made this building. This is the Ruiters Eiland complex. It's in the inner city where the Faculty of Law and Economics and Behavioral and Social Sciences are housed. Huge building, state-of-the-art technology, everything new. They dressed down the Faculty of Alpha Science, of the languages, of philosophy, of history. They did a lot of budget cuts. So it was basically a sort of restructuring, a refocus on more publishing, more international researchers, more international money, also a focus on rankings. So how can we put Amsterdam on top of rankings? And this is basically the movement that I saw happening over the past 10, 15 years, more and more and more. And our programs became international. And with this transformation, I saw more and more academic freedom is dying. And woke, I think, is growing into this soil. Yeah, it's a fertile soil for woke.
The question comes to mind, that was that correlation or causality? You see two changes taking place at the same time.
Yeah,
how would you answer that?
It's parallel, I think. Yeah, okay. It went parallel. It sort of feeds on each other.
Is it your observation that it's just happening here, or is this happening in other universities?
It's happening everywhere. And this is also why I more and more distrust science. I think we should have a total...
Science? We haven't mentioned science. So why did you're talking to follow the science. So what has science done to offend you then?
Well, I think that basically what I have learned from Bruno Latour is that science and politics can never be divided, and that the old Enlightenment ideal of objective truth is an illusion. Yeah, and so there's only one option. We have to be transparent about the politics and democratize it. Yeah? So what is happening, I think, at universities is that we are not transparent about the politics. I think we have a sort of a neoliberal way of doing science that dresses up as objective, as often monodisciplinary, specialized. I, for example, see virology, epidemiology, the disciplines that dominated the COVID response. I think there is this sort of, it's a narrow-minded view with very interesting and specialized knowledge, don't get me wrong, but directly connected to industry, to neoliberal interests, financed by big corporations with certain interests. So there's a narrowing down of research focus, and I think therefore also of research results.
Okay, so thank you for that. It's an elaborate answer. We did some sidesteps from me asking the definition of woke.
Yeah.
The other thing that you mentioned at the start of this conversation was non-binary.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the center, the core on which you were attacked.
Yeah.
And you just did it also in this conversation. You made the claim, well, there's no such thing. Maybe you can explain to me, to the audience, what is binary, what is non-binary, and what's the core of the assault on you on that?
So basically, in general, we can see that gender studies was born around this idea of there's a difference between sex and gender. Gender is more a social construct, and sex is more the body and what comes from nature and biology. And so gender studies made this big revolution by saying how we experience being a man, being a woman, our femininity and masculinity is socially constructed. We know this from Simone de Beauvoir, but also, of course, from the work of, for example, Judith Butler, that basically she said gender is a performance. It's a performativity. It's something that we enact and that we create. Yeah, through our social behavior. It is not something, all these gender studies theorists said, it's not something that comes from nature. It is something that we make. Yeah? And so this is basically the basic foundation of gender studies. And I think in many ways, this is a huge breakthrough. This is absolutely a fascinating way of thinking, and in many ways has liberated us from essentialist thinking about gender. the man is like that and the woman is like that and that's the way it is. No, there's a lot of roles and norms and culture and behavior shaping gender, and there's flexibility and fluidity there. At the same time, I think a big problem has become now that it's getting extreme, and that people think that these gender theories have proved that gender is nothing more than a role, nothing more than culture, nothing more than behavior, and that we can, if we behave differently, if we have different roles, different norms, then gender doesn't exist anymore. And I think this is wrong. I am an interdisciplinary social scientist. I also read a lot about queer evolutionary biology. I read a lot about psychology, Freudian psychoanalysis, Jungian psychology. And these disciplines have very clearly shown that there is something like a gender binary. Yeah? It exists. So this is basically the intervention that I've been trying to do in my article. I'm also working now on an academic peer-reviewed article to translate my Dutch article. That I say, okay, if we look at human beings, yes, they are what I call androgynous. All men have a feminine side inside of them. Yeah? All women have a masculine side inside of them. That's all true. But there is nothing outside of male, female, masculine, feminine. Just like there is no colors outside of the rainbow. Yeah? So there is a certain framework, a structure, yeah, that comes from the universe, or however you might call it. It's there before we become social in as human beings, before we make culture. There is a framework that we encounter. We don't make it. It's there. Yeah. So that is basically my point that I show also from the recent insights from cultural anthropology, from studies on primates, from studies on psychology, etc., that there is no scientific proof for the validity of a category like non-binary.
Okay, let's see if I understand you. Yeah. And I like to do that with examples. So I'm a male.
Yeah.
I'm a man.
Yeah.
Right. So that would be this, but I could have feminine traits. Those would be being emotional or empathic.
Yeah.
That would be.
That's
those
an
traits.
Example.
Or I could be aggressive, and then that would more be the masculine.
There is a lot of debate in what and how we can define masculine and feminine, but you can make that point, okay. I think. Yeah?
Now, I feel, so this is a real life example, I feel like a male, but I could also feel that this could be a woman. Oh,
yeah.
still teen.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But I could feel like a woman, that would make me transgender, right? So I could be in the wrong body.
Yeah.
There's academic proof for that. This is true.
Transgender has been fully researched. I just want to make clear that the concept of gender dysphoria has been substantiated by anthropology, neuroscience.
So we got that settled.
Yeah, and also psychology, etc. Yeah.
So this, my identity, so the way I feel, I identify as a male.
Yeah.
That would be here. I could also identify as a female.
Yeah.
What happens when I'm in the middle then?
Yeah.
That's non-binary, that does not exist. That's
I say a better alternative to talk about the middle, because we are all in the middle, because we all are androgynous.
Somewhere on this line.
Yeah, all men have feminine aspects, all women have masculine aspects. So that is basically what I showed, that evolutionary theory has proved that Homo sapiens arose from the savannah and was outcompeted the other species because men feminized and women masculinized. So basically the sexes grew together, but that didn't mean that they became non-binary. It just became that women started to develop masculine aspects in the personality and men started to develop feminine aspects. So this meant better cooperation in more complex communities and more innovation and creativity. So that is basically what I say. Yeah, androgyny is a fruitful concept to talk about the spectrum, but non-binary, then you say you go outside of the spectrum. You say there is no distinction between man and woman. There is no distinction between feminine and masculine, or at least not for some people. I think we have intersex people, hermaphrodites they were called in the past, very rare phenomenon. Even the intersex people often have very serious medical conditions, by the way. Yeah? So also we shouldn't be too quick to say we should emancipate it. Yeah? But there is a lot of, there is a little bit of emancipation to be done there. But also intersex people often don't want to go beyond men and women. So there is a whole, I see it spreading in society, in the campuses of the university, but also in broad Dutch society, in our schools, in our youth. We see that young people, they think that non-binary is a valid category. And then I think it's dangerous because they order hormones, they start to distrust their, what I call their gender, primary gender identity, the core feeling of I am a man or I'm a woman, which comes from within. We are organic biological beings, so it, we cannot just decide if we are born a girl to say, yeah, I'm a man from now on, or none, or none or both. Yeah, there's gender dysphoria, then you got, there's professionals for that, but you can't just make this up and you're in secondary school. So this is what I see, a very dangerous trend, that it's basically anything goes with gender. You can just decide, there's not even neo-pronouns, you can also call yourself a cat. Yeah, and then I think everything goes. And yeah, then I feel that science has a responsibility to say, listen, there is limits to what is possible. Yeah? And this
has it been studied then? Has there been an academic research into people that would call themselves non-binary?
Yeah. And this is all the time also what's being said to me. And the people accuse me of saying, you should not judge these people. You should not say it doesn't exist. You should take all the experience of people seriously. And if they say they're non-binary, then they are non-binary. And then I say no. Because there's also people who say the earth is flat and they believe it. And that doesn't make the earth flat. If you believe in it, it doesn't change the fact that the earth is a globe. Some aspects of reality are very hard. And this is what people in social science find so hard, because I think they are what I always call, they are in a sort of constructivist loop. They think that you can construct and deconstruct endlessly. It's not true. There is a material world. There is a biological world. There is a psychological world. It's not only social construction. And it's also disciplinary arrogance of the sociologists to say that, oh, if somebody says something, and then it's language, and then it's enacted, it's social behavior, so it's real. No, it's not how it works.
Interesting that you mention flat earthers. Yeah. If I were to talk to someone that believes that, I would take them seriously and entertain that thought.
Yeah.
Just to see how far or to enter that that worldview of the other. The same would happen. I want to make an example of it. It happened yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Also not so safe a space, but Astrid Oosterburg, who is the chair of the Dutch COC. She, attack is maybe a big word, but she is critical on you, on your statement, on your piece.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I identify as non-binary.
Yeah.
So, Astrid, you're invited, and I'm happy to talk with you on this matter on a later date. But how would you respond to that?
Yeah, it's so meaningless. It's so meaningless to say that, because she calls herself a mother. She has, she calls herself she. And then you are suddenly non-binary, and then I think, yeah, why? Why? What does it add? Why should we invest in this? And also the emancipation goals of non-binary. How does it help to tear down patriarchy, to have gender-neutral toilets? Yeah, so I think it's important to realize that the LGBT community has been hijacked by empty and ideological and extreme thought. It's basically what I see as a smokescreen. We chase goals that are illusions, that are jokes, that cannot be taken seriously, but we celebrate them as if it's fantastic. If gender-neutral toilets are being installed, we see that as a victory. And then I think, okay, so whose interest would it be to have an LGBTI community that is lost? Yeah? Because remember, I always remember Foucault, Michel Foucault, who said, if you are gay, then you are in a certain societal position because you are different from the straight norm and heteronormativity and from the patriarchal system. So you are forced to drop out of the system if you want to be happy. So you have to desocialize from heteronormativity and patriarchy. So you become aware at a very young age because your sexuality is so strong. Then you have to adhere to it, so you break out of the closet, and then you also break out of society and out of norms. So you have a certain position. From that position, you can see clearly, what is wrong about society. And it's not a coincidence that many radical activists against capitalism, racism, etc. have been gay people or trans people, queer people. So it is a very authentic, radical activist position. So, and now we see, and the LGBT community has traditionally been, since the sexual revolution, a big threat to the world elites. And because they were so angry, we're here, we're queer, get used to it, we're gonna tear down. It was a whole project they were setting up. Tear down capitalism, tear down the heteronormativity and the laws, create a whole new society. Yeah, so they were anarchists, socialists, a very serious threat to the capitalist elite. And now we see that they are neutralized, that they are compromised, that they are politically correct, that they are, I think, hijacked. And so I also think that we should be critical, like woke, where does it come from? Who planted this? I don't want to sound too conspiratorial. But like, is it, in whose interest is it that this is growing? Yeah? That's for me an interesting question, an important question.
Yeah, so you're perceiving it, or you're calling it a threat to independent thought.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
What I think is because I have learned that the most dangerous form of authoritarianism is not, it's also Hannah Arendt said it herself, it's not Hitler anymore at this time, because it's such an obvious authoritarian bad person, who explicitly scapegoats an entire minority. Now, what now is the most dangerous form of totalitarianism is authoritarianism that dresses up with virtues. So it dresses up like, we protect the climate, we help minorities, we protect elderly people against the virus. Yeah, and then hidden in these virtues is authoritarianism, because then we don't see it and people don't resist. Yeah? And I think that is happening also with woke. Yeah? We have to see through it.
Now the word woke would be an English word, like awake.
Yeah.
And I was looking into where did that come from, and not that I would quote Wikipedia automatically, but people can look it up. On Wikipedia, it says that a protest singer from the Great Depression in the last century, Leadbelly, he used the term woke in 1938 in a song. So the term is not new.
No.
And that song is about black people, people of color, if you will, that were accused of raping a white woman. And apparently they were innocent. And he said, well, we have to make sure that we're not allowing prejudice to black people.
Fantastic.
To that's where woke came from. Yeah. So that's a nice definition.
So that's a great origin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just have to reinvent the word maybe then.
Yeah, I also think we have to, but there's the case with a lot of words, we have to hijack it back.
We have to steal it back.
Okay. We have to steal it back. So that's also now in the media, I often say, I'm also woke. I'm not the extreme woke, but I think this is what shocks the right, that I say, but you've been cancelled. Woke is bad. You've been cancelled. And then I say, but that's the extreme part of woke. Woke has a fantastic core of ideology and also science, queer studies, critical race studies, gender studies. Please, let's not totally judge it. There's a lot of good in there, but we have to be critical in the extremes.
Okay, with Follow the Science, we search out scientists or that not only identify what's wrong or what can be improved, but also that propose a better way forward. How can we move out of this then? What should we do?
So I think what's very crucial in reinventing science is that we have to go back to academic freedom. We have to we have forgotten how crucial it is for a peaceful world, for a free world, to have a space that is not only what I call a safe space, but also a brave space, where we can speak freely and openly, even if it shocks you, even if it offends you. I think we have been focusing too much on you should not hurt another person. Yes, you should hurt another person. It can happen in a scientific debate.
You should not be afraid to do that.
Exactly, that's what I meant. Yes, it can happen. That you hurt people because out of science, it's such an authentic search for truth that you are not concerned with societal norms and rules. Yeah, you can find things to be true that are shocking, and there should be space for that. Yeah, so I think this, the radical freedom of academia, academic freedom, is we should reinvent it. Here in the EU, we have this constitution, the EU constitution, the charter, we call it, Charter of Fundamental Rights. Article 13 says freedom of the arts and sciences. And it literally says academic freedom should be respected. The arts and the sciences should not have any restraints. So I think we should put that banner back in the universities, remove the war propaganda, and put this fundamental rights on the wall to remind people how crucial the scientific and academic project is for freedom. At the same time, we should also not forget what diversity policy and wokeness has brought us. If you have freedom, always comes with responsibility. Yeah? So there's always, you should not have unlimited academic freedom. Yeah? You should restrain it as little as you can. But you should not, of course, create here a space for pseudoscience, or for anti-Semitism, or for homophobia, or whatever. Yeah? So it's a delicate balance. Yeah.
So traditionally in the Netherlands, and I assume all over the world, It would be university students that make change, that protest.
Yeah.
We also have that tradition in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So it would be the university students here that would tear down those political posters.
Yeah.
And say, we're not a political institution.
Yeah.
But that's not what's happening now.
It's not now.
They're attacking the professor that says, let's have an academic debate.
They are.
So are you being supported just by some of your students? How does that work?
One? What I see is I get a lot of support, but it's one-to-one. So they send me emails, students and also colleagues, not only from the UvA, but from throughout the Netherlands. They send support, but what I see on the campus is that my enemies that think that I'm some sort of Andrew Tate, who is... I often get compared to Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate. I also see some similarities, yeah, because I've broken out of the norm just like they have. But I come from the left. Yeah? So they accuse me. So these people who are in the campus who accuse me, they are organizing. My proponents are not, because you should not underestimate the University of Amsterdam has a huge culture of fear. If you question the diversity policy and woke culture, basically the consensus on the campus is the whole term woke and the fact that it's a problem is a right-wing frame. So that I use the word woke and that I say the UvA is woke, that in itself is seen as a crime. And so I get accused by that. So there is a lot of resentment against me, and these people are organizing. I have to give a class in February. I have to teach for 200 students. I'm afraid that they will organize against me, do actions, throw eggs, cakes, I don't know what they will do. So they are organizing, and so I try to mobilize in my Twitter, I try to mobilize the university, the academic community, to also organize. But then for me, and not for me as a person, but for my cause, and that is academic freedom. If I want to be critical on the vaccines, I can be critical on the vaccines. If I want to be critical on non-binary, I can express that. I should have arguments, and people can be shocked, but we have to debate. And that is my cause.
Cool, thank you. Okay, so that will be my call to action also for people watching this. If you want to continue this conversation with me or with Laurens for Follow the Science, just do so, reach out, and then we talk further. Feel free to respond. That's where the solution would be
in
talking to each other.
Yeah.
So, okay. You're still a teacher here.
Yeah.
How do you perceive the future? This has been a busy week.
Yeah. So I cannot express how horrible, I cannot express enough how horrible the past week has been. It's maybe hard to communicate that in an interview like this, but I felt seriously threatened. Eh? I've been threatened not only by students, but also by my own management to be fired. There's a serious disruption here at the campus, at the university. The whole national media is on top of it. There will be an independent research committee, who will research my claims that woke is indeed a danger to academic freedom. We have to see what happens. I think now, most likely, how I feel it, I will be kicked out of the university. I will lose my job. But I also decided, like, I will go to the whistleblower policy. And before I did it, I, of course, knew, okay, this is not... I basically confront now the whole board of the university. It's not a good career move. But I also thought, like, listen, there should be... one of two things should happen. Or the university should change altogether, the whole faculty and the culture, because I'm so unhappy with my work that I don't even want to be here anymore. Yeah? Or I leave. So it's either they will change or I'm going to leave and do something else. And once I accepted that basically, okay, even losing I treasure my academic career very much, but losing it, for me, I would prefer that over staying here in this woke, repressive climate. Yeah? So, and once I realized that, I thought, okay, then I have nothing to lose. So then I'll do a one-to-one direct confrontation with this monster that I call woke neoliberal university.
You freed yourself.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
And I hope that other colleagues and students will join me, and that they will dare to speak out, because I'm not alone. A lot of people here at campus feel the repression, but they're afraid, because if you speak out, you're seen as racist, sexist, anti-diversity, anti-science, bad person. So there's the aggression and the fear for the aggression and the isolation and the scapegoating that keeps them in the system. And I hope that I can pave a way out of that.
Final question, and it's out of the context of this conversation. So thank you for this conversation.
Yeah.
But I am interested, and it's too soon to answer, but you've called on the whistleblower protection that this university has also in place.
Yeah.
So are you feeling taken serious there? How does that work?
I don't. I think it has been a disgrace how I have been treated as a whistleblower. That in itself is against the law. And it's enough reason to fire the whole board of this university. Only that, without even looking at my further report, because I wrote a 30-page report with detailed descriptions of things that go wrong here, cases, incidents, power abuse, money abuse. So what they have been doing, the university, is since I've been a whistleblower, the whole board has taken position against me. They have ordered top-down to my colleagues to isolate themselves from me. They have supported students that are mobilizing against me. They have scapegoated me in the press, in internal communication. This is absolutely unacceptable. And we have whistleblower legislation in Holland to prevent that things happen exactly that happened to me.
Okay. Laurens Buijs, thank you for your open conversation.
You're welcome.
Have you said everything that you wanted to share here in this
conference? I did. It was a wonderful conversation. And thank you so much for having this, giving me this opportunity to speak.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.